Well, the election is over and now comes the blame. And we're going to talk about that in podcast 776, the Bob Davis Podcasts. All right, let me start here with a sip of coffee. So one of the things that is going to come up now that the Democrats have won the House is this question of medical insurance, whether it's Obamacare or whatever the plan is. And so the whole question about medical care and medical insurance is going to come up again and again. And I want to talk to you about a resource for information about it that you're going to want to have. And this is this book, Big Brother in the Exam Room. Did you know doctors are now retiring or refusing to practice medicine because of Big Brother in the Exam Room? Now, I've been talking about Twyla Braze and her efforts to talk about how the government is taking away your privacy when it comes to your medical records. But it gets worse because now doctors are affected by privacy issues and the government is increasingly trying to control how they practice medicine. Listen to Twyla Braze talking about what she has to say about thousands of doctors getting out every year. Twyla is president of the Citizens Council for Health Freedom. These are people that are really doing great work when it comes to helping people understand what Obamacare is and what universal health care is and everything else.
There is a great exodus of physicians from the workforce today. Doctors are leaving, doctors are disappearing from the practice of medicine because they are fed up with doing a job that they did not expect to be doing. They have become data clerks. They are spending twice as much time with the electronic health record as they are with the patient. They feel like they are betraying their patients' confidences. They are being told by outsiders how they can treat patients and how they can't treat patients. The data in electronic health record is being used to determine the doctor's value according to outsiders' decisions, so that doctors are no longer being paid for their services, for their expertise, for their time. It's all according to an algorithm. And so doctors are leaving. 60.6% of doctors are planning to cut their hours, retire, find a non-clinical job, or work part-time. Non-physicians are being used to replace physicians. So people who haven't had one drop of medical training are suddenly being put into the position of a physician as though they were equal. And so I think this is something people need to understand, because we would like to get the healthcare system back to a place where doctors want to stay in practice. 55% of doctors are burned out. There are doctors committing suicide every day because they are so distraught in the profession. And it is time to bring back the joy of medicine, the mission of medicine, and take out all of this stuff that's getting in between the doctor and the patient.
So as a resource, you're going to want to get Big Brother in the Exam Room by Twyla Braze and find out more at cchfreedom.org or click on the Big Brother in the Exam Room banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. By the way, you're going to be hearing from Twyla because I have to call her and do an interview, especially after the election. You know, something else in the news these days is, of course, trade protection and foreign manufacturing. And this is becoming a really important issue because companies are trying to figure out what to do. Some companies are reshoring and they're bringing production back in-house. And then later they start wondering why they did that. If you are considering American manufacturing, I'm going to recommend DepotStar, American Design, Engineering, and Manufacturing. Visit their website at DepotStar.com, DepotStar.com, or click on the DepotStar banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. Well, where do I start with this? I really don't want to talk about politics, and I really don't want to talk about the election, but I'm kind of forced to because it's the elephant in the room, and there's a lot of talk and blame about what happened, particularly among Republicans, and whether or not it was a victory or not, and it's really upsetting to me. What I do not want to do is turn this into another recitation of percentage vote totals and performance by state and names that people don't recognize unless they live in a particular state like Arizona or Minnesota or whatever. And what I have been doing, I did something like 9 podcasts that outlined all the toss-up races, and I did conclusions and covered the election on election night and everything else. And there's enough statistics and names that people don't recognize in those podcasts to choke a horse, and I'm sick of it. But I have to start by just simply giving you the ground so that you understand, if you don't already, you know, if you watch CNN or Fox or any of these things, if you get your news from social media, all you're getting is opinion. And it's so irritating to me because it's predictions about what's going to happen or has happened, and it's opinion, 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 and it's very bad reporting and very, very bad information. And I don't think it's ever going to change. I think this is the new normal for American politics, where everyone is engaged and aroused constantly and upset and angry. I can't tell you how many people I ran into on election day that were just pissed. They were just not in a good mood. Even though they may have gone to vote, I was at the yoga studio and somebody said to me, "What's wrong with people today?" And I said, "Well, it's election day. What do you think's wrong with them? They're on edge. And for what reason? We're supposed to be living our lives. And this has become America's pastime. America's pastime used to be baseball, where people got together and talked about who was, you know, getting the hits and who was getting the runs and so forth and so on, who was getting the runs, which team was the best and all of that. Today, the American pastime is this nonsense that we call politics, and it's sickening to me. And I am tired of giving you statistics. So I'm going to start with a few statistics, and I'm sorry. I'm to myself because I'm tired of it. So far, the gain for Democrats has been 32 seats. And Republicans so far have only gained 2 seats in the Senate, with a victory of a Democrat in Arizona. If the Florida recount ends up with the Democrat winning, then the Republicans will have gained, as far as I can tell, only 1 Senate seat. So not much has changed for the Republicans and the Democrats in the Senate. The Democrats also gained 7 governorships. And if Florida recounts and whatever's happening in Georgia ends up with Democrat victories, you're going to have 9 governorships. They've also put in quite a performance in state legislatures, which I'm not going to outline because that's even worse than trying to explain what happened in the House. Not a bad performance for the Democratic Party in a midterm election. Certainly not as deep a victory as the Republicans won, I think, in 2010. But it doesn't matter because that's ancient history. It could have been 2014. I don't really remember. Anyway, now comes all the talk about what happened, with all the experts saying what happened and so forth and so on. My intention with this podcast was to do an easy talker, which means I just sit and talk. I am sitting here with a couple pieces of paper in front of me. Usually I don't have anything in front of me, and the idea is to kind of have a nice conversation about it. But there's so many components to this. There is so much gray in American politics today. And again, I don't think that's ever going to change. There's just too many sources of information, too much opinionating in the information business. It's not news. It's just information that gives people arguments that they can make on Twitter and Facebook. It's memes and silly stuff. And it makes me feel dirty, and it is not interesting to me anymore. And the only thing that was interesting to me about doing the 9 podcasts about the toss-up races was there was hard data that you could look at. There was hard polling data that you could look at, and you could say, here's what the extant situation is. And as I said on election night, looking at the data, including the final results, it reinforced my final conclusion on election night, which was this could have been avoided. And it could have been avoided by the Republicans. There was never any fait accompli that the Democrats were going to win these very, very close races. And for the president to call what the Republicans had in the 2018 midterms a victory is a joke of gargantuan proportions. Keeping the House and widening the Senate for the Republicans would have been a victory for the president. That is not what happened. And so this is on him, first of all, and secondly, it's on the GOP as a whole. And some people are going to say, especially in Minnesota, well, I don't know what you're talking about. We had 2 pickups. You know, big deal. They were House pickups, and that's nice. But the Minnesota GOP lost all statewide races and the House. It lost the attorney general's race against a candidate who was embattled, and lost 2 House seats. In addition to the gains, lost two key House seats in the Minneapolis and St. Paul Metro, the 2nd and 3rd districts. And in all, it was a ground loss for the Republicans in Minnesota, with the exception of the two pickups, and it was a ground loss for the Republicans nationwide. Yes, the Democrats had problems. Yes, you could say that some Democrats ran dirty campaigns with all the negative advertising, but so did Republicans. Yes, the Democrats reportedly supported thugs in the streets, but in some ways, throughout the summer, last summer, so did the Republicans. So when we start to get into recriminations, the first one, and I'm seeing this already, is Republicans saying the polls were biased. And this is the one thing that this is worse for me than the Ron Paul people saying, well, Ron Paul lost because the media wouldn't talk about him, because it's so childish. It is beyond reason. I've done so many podcasts about polling. The polls don't tell you what outcomes are going to be. They can only give you probabilities. And the polls for these elections showed probabilities in which the House could have gone to the Democrats or the Republicans could have held. In fact, when you go through the results, you're going to see a lot of GOP and Democrat holds across the country, except for some key places. And that has to do with turnout. And when I hear people talking about, especially Republicans, about biased polling, it just is so immature because it doesn't address what happened. Now the country's lost because the polling is the polls lie and everything else. The polls are not crystal balls. They don't tell you the future. They only give you probabilities. And what we had were many, many, many close races, which Charlie Cook and others accurately referred to as toss-ups. I didn't like the term because the implication was that these were fait accomplis. But in fact, they weren't. And if Republicans had fought harder to get people out to vote, then they weren't necessarily lost. And what happened? Well, you know, as far as I can tell, without getting too detailed, it looks to me like simply more Democrats voted in the election than Republican votes were cast. And this was especially higher in states where they won elections, Minnesota, Pennsylvania. If you look at I'll put a link up on the blog for this podcast, and you can see that the turnout was much higher in those places where the Democrats had victory. So it's all about turnout. As I said in those 9 podcasts and in the analysis of what was about to happen, I said it is about turnout, and Republicans could have won those races. They could have won, they could have succeeded in Illinois with Pete Roskam. They could have succeeded in Minnesota in the first and in the 2nd and 3rd districts. They could have succeeded in Iowa in the 1st district. The problem was not enough Republicans went out and voted. And it's just that simple to me. Now, Republicans are going to bitch and moan about felons voting and fraud and everything else. But when it comes down to it, this is an election that had the highest voter turnout in 50 years for a midterm. Now, I don't know what that tells you other than we are obsessed with politics. We used to, you know, the American pastime used to be baseball, and now apparently it's politics and who's going to win the game and what this one said and what that one said. And I don't know whether Trump did that or whether that was going to happen anyway. I don't know that anything can be done about that. But the fact is that we had very high voter turnout. Now, that's supposed to be a good thing. You know, people voting is supposed to be a good thing. But what that means in a midterm, when you have presidential level voting, you have much closer elections, you have a much higher potential for one party or the other to defeat the majority party. And what it means is that the norms in that midterm period, which is for Republicans, that white and older voters vote more than younger and Democrat voters, white and conservative older people, was blown out of the water, particularly in states where Democrats won victories. Well, I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast that I've been working on a PowerPoint presentation and working on my business because actually I'll probably end up doing a podcast about organic work. But one of the things that I added last year is a payment processor. I found ReliaFund online at ReliaFund.com, R-E-L-I-A-F-U-N-D.com, and I'm pretty excited about using ReliaFund as a payment processor. Now, if you are in business and you want to improve your payment processing, if you want to get paid faster and get a payment processor, if you're a developer and you develop websites for clients that do e-commerce, or you're building back office stuff for your client, listen up because this message is for you. So what is ReliaFund? It is a payment processor that's been providing integrated solutions to get payments cleared for more than 2 decades. There's no long-term contracts. They're secure, they're technology-focused, and they're great guys. You're going to talk to a human being if you call them, Kevin Hill or Greg Lowry, 866-243-5040, or check them out online at ReliaFund.com. That's ReliaFund.com, R-E-L-I-A-F-U-N-D.com. Let me give you the number one more time, 866-243-5040, 866-243-5040. Join the payment processing revolution with ReliaFund at ReliaFund.com. So I've kind of explained to you what happened. It had to do with midterm voter turnout. There were many more Democrats voting, and particularly in states where Democrats had victories. And so that's probably one of the main reasons, if not the reason, that it had to do with turnout. And I don't know, you know, I believe that in Minnesota there were more Democrats voting than Republicans. And as I said in one of the podcasts where I talked about voters, I said, you know, if every Republican goes out and votes, then they have the potential to overwhelm the urban centers' Democrat votes. And to a certain extent, that played out in the 1st and 8th district in Minnesota. But the problem is that the metropolitan advantage for Democrats in Hennepin and Ramsey, and to a lesser extent, Olmsted County, actually helped the statewide candidates defeat Republicans. So the question is, where were the Republicans? I don't know if Republican turnout was higher than normal. It should have been a lot higher, in my opinion, if you wanted to win the election. What are the Republicans doing? And this is where it gets harsh, and this is where I have to say some things. And these might end up as themes in these podcasts about politics, because if as much as anything, they're podcasts about society. And I want to make – by talking about Republicans, I am not attacking Republicans. I am not I'm not avoiding attacking Democrats. I'm not taking sides. I just have these observations, and I think they're really, really important. So for a long time, I have felt that the advent of Donald Trump as a presidential candidate and then eventually as the nominee for the Republican Party was going to start cracking the principled core of the Republican Party, such as it was or is. You know, the Republican Party prior to Trump was pretty much run by the moderates. It looked like he was going to run the moderates out, but in fact, the moderates made a deal with the devil in the form of Donald Trump. And they, you know, said, we'll help you win if we govern. Well, in the first year, they got rid of, you know, what's his name? You know, I can't remember his name, Rens Priebus, as the co-chief of staff. And, you know, Paul Ryan is resigning from the House, and we'll see how long Mitch McConnell stays in there. So the moderate core of the Republican Party is really struggling with Donald Trump as president. And the thing is, when someone like Donald Trump is at the head of your party, it's either going to have to go his way or not. And it's that simple. And since he's the president, then it's got to go his way. So he has been struggling, and I'm not defending Trump or his policies because I don't agree with his policies for the most part. But he has been battling, you know, obstruction in the House from Republicans and in the Senate from Republicans in addition to Democrats in the first 2 years of his office. Well, now he's lost the House. I wouldn't say that he now has a legislative mandate or a legislative majority that can defend him or that can pass his ideas, whatever they are. I have criticized Trump for having terrible legislative reach. He isn't able to work with legislators to pass anything. He wants what he wants today, tomorrow, it's something else. And I think what's happened is that the man who is the head of the Republican Party, for better or for worse, is President Trump with all of his problems. Here's what I see in terms of Republicans. I see a lot of old guys talking about constitutional conventions. I see a lot of people talking about the convention, the original Constitutional Convention, talking about 1776, talking about, you know, what the Constitution originally meant and everything else. And I'm going to tell you, no one gives a damn. They just don't care. The problem with the Republicans is, first of all, they did not repeal Obamacare, which they should have. They are not able to defend their positions against radical leftism. In fact, as far as I can tell, Republicans don't have anything more than a rhetorical defense against leftist positions, which apparently have been pretty well thought out, if you want to include Karl Marx as an intellectual, for quite some time. And I don't know what the Democrats are going to end up presenting as a legislative plan, but they really don't have to because they're not in power. That will come in 2020 unless the Republicans figure this out. But when I talk about Republicans not being able to make arguments, it's people that I know that are Republicans. It's the people that are going and used to go to the Tea Party. It's the people that show up at all these meetings. They just simply don't know how to defend their positions, whatever those positions are, against radical leftism. And so they're left complaining about people blocking roads. They're left complaining about, you know, Antifa. They're left complaining about Muslims. They're left complaining about everything that isn't Trump. And all they can offer in defense is it's better than Hillary. And as far as I can tell, the Republican Party has no plan for the future except walls and tax cuts, even though they are spending more. In fact, we've already piled on $700 billion-some dollars to the national debt, and we're not even done with 2018. So I don't see an agenda on the part of the Republicans, and I think this is what hurt Republicans in this election. Did you hear any Republicans talking about an agenda, like we're going to go repeal Obamacare, we're going to go cut the budget and stop all of this spending, we're going to get out of Afghanistan, we're going to do this, that, or the other thing? I don't know, anything. I haven't heard a plan for the country, a plan for the younger generation, a plan for the older generation, a plan for anyone except, no, we're not going to do that. They're socialists, better than Hillary, lock her up, etc. That eventually doesn't win. And it works for Trump for the time being. But I would have to say, based on what I've learned about the midterm, it isn't working for Trump. And it probably isn't going to work for Trump at all, given the fact that he's lost the House. This was critical. The Republicans had to maintain the House, and they didn't turn out the vote. And I think it's because they didn't have positions. Now, Congressman Jason Lewis, who is outgoing now, a freshman congressman, said that it all started with the McCain vote on Obamacare. Maybe so, but what was sent to the Senate wasn't so great, and that was the skinny repeal. And as far as I know, Jason voted against that. So there was no real quote-unquote contract with America. There's been a lot of comparisons to this president with Ronald Reagan, and the fact is that between Newt Gingrich and Reagan, they were able to cobble together a legislative strategy that captured the attention of America and supported the president's travels around the country and gave him something specific to talk about. And as you know, if you listen to old speeches, you know that Reagan was very specific in his discussions and very specific in terms of details about what he wanted to do. This president doesn't do that. This president just takes shots at people. And, you know, this is not to attack him. He has a lot of people against him. Certainly the media doesn't like him and all of that. But you know what? The presidency's a big job, and people who run for president have big shoulders, and they should expect that there are going to be people that disagree with them, and they're going to be in the media. That's just a fait accompli. When you have the arguments, when you have the intellectual advantage, then it makes dealing with the media a little bit easier. I don't see Republicans with the intellectual advantage. I see a lot of rhetoric. I see a lot of people screaming and yelling. I see a lot of people talking about build the wall and better than Hillary and all this stuff, which are nice flourishes. But when it comes down to, you know, fielding candidates with a plan, as the Democrats did in general, some of those candidates lost and some of them won. But they know what they want to do, and they have a plan to do it. And if you listen to debates, whether it was Pete Roskam or, you know, some of the congressional candidate debates that happened all over the country, you heard again and again Democrats talking about specifics. This is what we want to do. We want free education. We want free health care. We want free this. We want to do this. We want to do that. And Republicans just had no answer for it other than, well, we're not going to do that. And then all they had to do was say, what about Trump? And then people like Pete Roskin and Jason Lewis and Eric Paulson and others that were, quote unquote, establishment Republicans had nothing to say, because how do you defend someone like Donald Trump unless you're willing to jump on the bandwagon? You can say what they said, which is, I don't agree with everything he does, but he's the president and he's the head of my party. Well, that's not an answer. Either you agree with him and you run with him, or you run against him. That's what it comes down to. And I think that's one of the key problems with the Republicans. We're not cutting spending. We're not making any progress towards permanently reducing the size, scope, and power of government. And now the Republicans have lost the House, which means we're going to go back through this whole cycle again of defeating the Republicans, bringing in a Democrat majority, taxing and spending, handing out free candy to people, winning a couple of elections, and then the Republicans come back with some kind of rhetorical candidate that overwhelms because people are upset. And we're not getting anywhere. So when I say I don't see how the country's going to, you know, change or get better, and this is why I am not just post-political or post-partisan, but I am completely disillusioned with both parties, because I don't think we're anywhere near approaching any solutions for problems. And I think we are cruising for a bruising. I think that there's going to be a crisis at some point. I don't know what it's going to be. I've predicted it. And I hate to do predictions, because you never know. It could be tomorrow, or it could be 6 months from now, or it could be 6 years from now. It's almost impossible. But I don't see how this can continue. I don't see how you can continue, you know, adding debt to give people tax cuts, or adding debt to do, you know, free education, or adding debt to, build highways. I mean, how do you tell people we're the party of common sense, we Republicans, when and say things like, well, we can't afford trillions of dollars in debt to give people free educations or to give people free health care. But then you turn around and give people a tax cut that actually gives the ads something like, what is it? It's $1.7 trillion in spending that is not, quote unquote, paid for. So, and by the way, when I say paid for, I don't mean raising taxes to give people a tax cut. I mean, if you're going to cut taxes, if you're going to be a supply sider, this is the way it works. You cut spending, then you give a tax cut. Then you cut spending again, then you give a tax cut. And then you cut spending again, then you give a tax cut. The only thing that you can draw from this in defense of the Republicans is that the American people just aren't there. They don't think the government is a problem. They think that someone like Donald Trump is a problem, who has turned everything into some kind of rhetorical flourish or an argument or pointing fingers or making statements about people that are sometimes it's genuinely funny and sometimes it's really not funny, but we laugh anyway. Republicans love Trump because he gives it to the Democrats. But guess what, people? It didn't work in the midterms. And I think it could have been avoided. I think a lot of those close races could have been wins. And instead of 32 seats, it would have been 10 seats. And instead of gaining one seat in the Senate or two seats in the Senate, it would have been five or six or seven. Instead, the Democrats outspent Republicans in target races. They got the people out to vote, and the Republicans didn't. And I would have to ask, where were the Republicans? You know, what happened with the Republicans? And if you think I'm just making this up, let me tell you, go back and listen to the podcast from the Republican convention in Duluth here in Minnesota. Again, some of the worst political speeches that I've ever heard at that convention, and virtually completely protein free in terms of what they wanted to accomplish. They had nothing to say other than Trump and we hate Democrats, and that was it. Taxation and everything else. And the thing is, in Minnesota especially, and a lot of these Democrat states where there was high voter turnout, where they were able to basically carve out a few of these victories to add up to a total of 32, and it may be 35 when it's all over with, which is historic for the Democrats. They were able to do it by getting people to contribute to their campaigns, by getting people out to vote. And where was the NRCC? You know, where were the Republican contributors? Where were the Republican rich guys? You know, if the Democrats have Tom Steyer and Bloomberg and, whatever his name is, George Soros, where were the Mercers? And where was the guy from Vegas, you know, and a whole list of other Republican vendors who contribute money I'll tell you where they were. They were single-issue Charlies is what they are. They're all one-issue Charlies. Either it's abortion or it's defense spending or it's taxation or something like that. And they don't just give to the House and say, you know, they don't just give to a party and say, here, take this money and win. They're as partisan as any partisan guy that you run into at any Tea Party meeting. And they don't operate as a team. They operate as single-issue Charlies, almost all of them. And especially in Minnesota, that is true of the 13 rich guys in Minnetonka and, wherever it is, the rich suburbs of St. Paul, you know, like, I don't know, Mendota. I don't know. I'm just saying that I blame the national Republicans. I blame the rich vendors that supposedly had deep pockets. And I think they abandon Trump just like the voters abandoned Trump in this election. Was it as bad as it could have been? No. I mean, the Democrats could have gained 65 seats. And I think some Democrats were disappointed with the performance. But I think it is time for Republicans to take a close look at principles and what they are selling, because they aren't selling very much. Well, thanks for listening to podcast 776. I got to mention that all the printing that I've had to do to cover this election has been powered by Cartridge World. I love Cartridge World because I hate my printer. And the reason I hate my printer is I hate paying all that money for print cartridges at retail locations, the big box retailers, because they're so expensive. Guess what? Cartridge World in Maple Grove can save you up to 30% compared to the big box stores, and they are guaranteed to perform as good as new. I personally think my Cartridge World cartridge is better than the one that I pay a fortune for at the big box retailer. Free delivery on qualifying orders. Cartridge World in Maple Grove off of Weaver Lake Road between Dairy Queen and Subway in Maple Grove. Remember, 763-420-6632. That's 763-420-6632, or click on the banner at the top of the page, thebobdavispodcasts.com. Thanks again for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on iTunes, Stitcher.com for Android devices. Tune in, Google Play, the Google Podcast app for Android devices, and of course, right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. We have streaming, which plays the last three podcasts. Also, you can select a podcast, and then that turns the streaming off, and you can listen by hitting play right off the page, or taking the RSS feed right off the page as well at thebobdavispodcast.com. Appreciate the likes and the shares and the favoriting on Facebook and Twitter, even though I can't stand them. I love Instagram, and welcome if you found my Instagram feed. And thanks for listening to podcast 776, the Bob Davis Podcasts.
Fighting flames of fire, hang on to burning wires. We